So President Obama was at the Baker Institute for Public Policy at Rice University. And, you know, while he went through a whole bunch of things that, you know, I find, you know, interesting, like pointing out that, you know, we're the one of the largest oil producing countries in the world. And it was because of him. And I don't know, that's something I would really want to be saying that's a good thing. But it was because of him. They did a lot of drill baby drilling. I would have liked to have seen more energy put into getting us off of the dirty stuff, but I digress. He did point out that that his administration didn't have anyone indicted. And I guess that's one of the few jabs he's really taken specifically at Trump. But accurate. One of the few administrations, at least in my memory, that didn't have anyone indicted. And he said it's because, well, they had people who joined his administration for the right reasons. And I would argue more that we were keeping an eye on them, and more that, well, they were doing the right stuff. They were decent people, as opposed to, well, the criminals we see running our government now. Here to share some thoughts on that, and also to unveil the new Trump name, our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us. Nope, not hearing it.
Why?
There you are.
Oh, are you good?
Yes, we are good. Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate you being here.
Hi, how are you?
I am fantastic. New name for the Trumpster. Individual number one.
There are a lot of names that I have for Donald Trump. Individual number one was not something that I really thought about, but points to Mueller on that one.
Or, you know, or just giant pile of steaming number two.
You know, I prefer that. If he had made it, you know, number two, I think people would assume that it was Mueller taking a jab at him. And you know, what's crazy is that Donald Trump is going to be like, yeah, because I'm number one.
Yeah, well, it's true. But last night we had Andrea Chalupa on the program, and she's got me thinking a little bit differently that maybe Trump in this investigation really is number two. And the real number one is the guy who's the head of the Russian mafia.
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm brave enough to comment.
Because, you know, I do have occasionally open windows in my house.
Turns out.
I would hate to be. And I, you know, a while ago, I found out there was actually a word for that. Defenstrated means being thrown out of a window. And I'm going, really? There's an actual word for that?
Jeez, this whole time I was thinking of it as like Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, there you go. So individual number one, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of boring, but I guess it is what it is. And hopefully it will be where the aim of this investigation leads up. Let's look. Evidently, this author, Craig Unger, don't know if you saw the story on this or his book, the book of House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. He claims that Trump has been compromised by the Russians for decades. And that's the biggest surprise of his book. And I'm going, is that really a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise. You can track back all of the interaction that he's had with Russians, either here in the United States and then well into whenever he decided to start playing in Moscow and started planning the Trump Tower Moscow and the Miss Universe pageant. Like, this has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah, and, you know, how do you think he got bailed out of all of his bankruptcies? But this guy also goes on to say that, you know, Russian money, the reason Republicans are, you know, so fighting against this investigation is Russian money has just infiltrated the entire Republican establishment. And they point out that back in the 90s, the Russians were given the hammer, tons of money, Tom DeLay, tons of money, you know, to influence him. And a lot of how Republicans took over Congress was funded by the Russians.
And then you have this unfettered donation that you can do through thanks to Citizens United. So technically, it's supposed to be illegal for a foreign entity to donate to a campaign or be involved in American politics. But because we have no requirements now, because you can funnel it all over the place, this is just another example of how we have failed to create a check on illegal fundraising that's happening. Yeah. So,
and as long as you got the NRA, you've got a vehicle to funnel that money, launder that money right on through. Did you find it as funny as I do that they've lost like $55 million in revenue the last couple of years and had to lay off a bunch of people at NRA TV. And I don't like to see people lose their jobs, but when you're propagandists, yeah, I'm okay with it.
When you're a demon working for Satan, is it really all that big of a loss for if you lose your job? I mean, presumably you can always just go work at Arby's.
Yes, thank you.
I'll be here all week. That was a throwback to John Stewart, by the way, who had an ongoing war with Arby's. But yeah, no, it's bizarre to me that these people think that they can get away with all of this. I mean, that the NRA has been bankrolled by everybody except their actual members for how many elections now? And so finally, I'm glad that they've been caught in some of the illegal Russian money that they've been that they've scored. But, you know, I'm wondering what the gun manufacturers are doing.
Yeah, I'm with you. But, you know, here's the thing. And this is one of the things that gets me. I mean, we now find out that there was, you know, a Trump Tower deal going on at the time when Trump said there was no deal. And I remember him specifically saying, I've never had any dealings in Russia. Never, nothing, ever. And to me, it's kind of akin to, you know, I didn't have relations with that woman. It's on the same level.
It is on the same level. And what's interesting is that Trump filled out his questions to Mueller and admitted to it. I mean, he said in his statement to Mueller that, of course, he had business dealings in Russia. So really, it's just been that he's been lying to the American people for 2 years, 3 years.
And does that matter? He's a politician. Does it matter? All politicians lie. They're all liars.
I mean, that's the thing that I wonder is if people are really going to understand that or realize that. I feel like his friends will probably say, oh, well, all politicians are liars. And, you know, at least we know that this one cares about me, which is, again, you just want to be like, huh, really? How do you figure? But I mean, how can you dismiss that? It's not like he's lying about he had an affair with a porn star. You know, this is about somebody who has a foreign entity, a foreign government who is now tried to get invested in an American election. It's terrifying. It's treasonous. It's wrong on so many levels.
No, I'm with you. But, you know, on the porn star money, you know, I found it really interesting today when Trump was asked about Cohen, his plea and flipping on him. I found it interesting that he used the word weak like 100 times. It was like the only word that he could get out of his mouth. But, you know, he went on to, you know, kind of ramble on that he had no idea, you know, why Cohen was charged in the first stuff. You know, it was all stuff that he had done in his personal life with real estate and all kind of stuff. And I'm going, hey, dummy, he did that for you to pay off your porn stars.
Yeah. And I mean, the idea that he was saying weak, first of all, let's get out of the way that he sounded like a 90s film star where he's just like, dude, that's weak. Grow up, old man. But at the same time, you're just sort of like, dude, this is one of those things where he campaigned on his business reputation, right? He campaigned all about how I am this genius businessman and I get deals done and I do all of these things. Well, you're doing shady stuff with the Russians, man. Like that is your business dealings that you're promoting to everybody. Shady stuff with the Russians. I'm not sure that that's really a qualification for a president of the United States. Maybe go be a governor in Russia. I wouldn't mind him leaving.
I'll pay for the plane ticket.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. You know, that was one of the things that I think a lot of people, he was a businessman. We need a businessman. I'm going, no, he's a shady criminal businessman. Look, you know, I go back and I've said this a bunch of times. You know, you look at the things that have happened to the working class in this country. It's always the white guy in the white shirt sitting in the corner office screwing over the working class. It's the businessman who's been screwing us. And yet we're going to put that guy in the most powerful position in the entire world and then expect something positive to come out of it for us. It's like, duh.
And now we're seeing it in full force with General Motors.
Exactly.
So, and all of the poor Trump supporters who work there are trying to make up excuses for, you know, this is the big corporations that are doing this. No, you idiot. This is all of Trump's laws that he passed, all of his tariff crap and, you know, his war on foreign steel. And I mean, this is more than just big corporations and their regular everyday greed.
No, I look more at it. It's the, you know, the territorial tax. I look at more the tax windfall. And not to get into a butting heads moment, but I actually agree with, we need to have some type of trade enforcement because we're getting killed by China. And look, we can have the argument that we should have open trade with Germany and the UK and Canada, and I'm right there with you. But at some point, I don't want to badmouth tariffs too much because I actually think that we need something along those lines to help protect some of our industries because we're getting our lunch eaten by China.
And my farmers back home are getting killed right now. That's the thing that's just insane. It's like I don't feel like it's helping anybody.
But at the end of it, you know, where was all of the money that they were supposed to give to help the farmers out? Oh, that's right. It just went to the big agribusinesses.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's really hacking off rural Oklahoma, I know for sure. And I think, too, there's a pride factor there where, the family farms, the folks that are individuals, not massive conglomerates, they don't want to be handed a whole bunch of cash not to farm. You know, they don't want a handout from the government. They want to do what they do and make their money and grow the stuff that they've always done. This is not an issue of you know, please the government come bail me out.
No, I understand that, but at the end of the day, you know, they're part of a huge picture. If you know you want to hurt the U.S., you go after agriculture. I mean, you look at how Mexico responded to Trump, you know, saying, look, we got to figure out how to renegotiate this NAFTA. The first thing they went after was agriculture because that's the squeal point in this country.
I just don't understand how he's getting away with it. I mean, this is part of the country that voted for him in insane numbers.
Yeah, and look, I take a lot of guff for supporting the idea that we need to have tariffs. But I'm with you. I don't know how, you know, rural America, I don't know how the people who voted for him were being crushed by these policies here. I don't know how they still go, yep, that's our guy.
And then they vote for people like Kevin Stitt for Oklahoma governor, who is just going to ensure more rural hospitals close, more schools gets consolidated, and it's just going to kill rural America. Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, I want to go back to the Russia thing for a second.
Sorry, wild tangent.
No, it's a real, real rough segue, but I got to know, you know, with all of this stuff that's coming out, are we maybe going to see the P tape?
I hope so. I honestly don't know at this point. I feel like Putin is going to hold that back until the moment that he needs to manipulate Trump. You know, like this isn't something that, unless somebody else has a copy of it and they want to release it just for giggles.
Yeah.
But I think that Putin's only going to use that for compromise, not necessarily for just to entertain the rest of the world.
Because there's got to be something there. There's got to be something there because we hear now today that, you know, evidently, you know, to get the Trump Tower done, they were willing to give Putin a $50 million penthouse. And I'm going... And that's for, I get greasing palms, I get that stuff, but a $50 million penthouse is not peanuts.
You know, I'm a simple girl. I'd be fine with a million.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, I feel like a lot of what we found out this week, what we found out today in the Michael Cohen information that he released, I think that is something that Putin was probably using as leverage over Donald Trump. So in some ways, in some respects, it does free Donald Trump up so that Putin can't manipulate him for that. At the same time, I wonder what else there is, right? I mean, there's got to be more. This is obviously just the tip of the iceberg, and this was the first link from Russia to Trump's actual business. And Trump said, you know, he came out and said, this is a red line. You cannot cross the red line of looking into my business, my businesses and my finances. And Mueller was like, you know, look behind me at this point. So I feel like he's probably crossed that line a very long time ago.
Yeah.
And he's going to keep going. There's probably a heck of a lot more there. But again, like, I feel like the Cohen stuff, I feel like we're at the end of this because there's no way that Mueller would have had that hearing today with Cohen and released all of that information if he wasn't toward the end, if he didn't have all of this information already and he wasn't ready to release it all. So,
yeah, but I'm watching this movie play out, and you know, it just looks like a bad 80s mafia movie, because you know, now you know, all of you know, CNN and all the you know, Trump's a mafia boss. Yeah, I've been saying that for years now. That is not new. Congratulations, welcome to the club.
I mean, it's hyperbolically he's a mafia boss, but the dude actually did deals with the mafia.
Yes.
I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility. Not just the American mafia, not just in Jersey for the casinos and to get deals with Teamsters and all of that other stuff. We're looking at like Russian mafia now. So there's a lot going on here, and I don't understand how this dude's not terrified for his life all the time with all of the critters that he's worked with. They're a little bit sketchy.
A lot of bit sketchy. And you know, and this is where, you know, I look at Manafort, you know, we find out now that, well, he was probably just jerking them around the whole time, because, you know, he thought, you know, open windows.
Yeah. And it could have been, you know, it could have been that he had some crazy strategy that he was trying to craft, but it didn't work out. I don't know what Manafort is thinking.
What I think it was, and I think Giuliani alluded to this yesterday, where they have these mutual defense agreements, where, you know, and we've been hearing these stories that all of the different players, their lawyers have been all kind of talking. And, you know, I thought, you know, from the beginning, Manafort was just kind of like a plant. Let's find out what he's got, and let's feed him a bunch of BS and see where he goes. If you can put him on a fool's errand of chasing his tail, it works out good for you. Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't look like Mueller fell for it, but, you know, that's where I thought it was going.
Yeah, the fact that Mueller was so many steps ahead of them in this is, that was the gold. That was the just Schadenfreude gold of the week. Looking at, you know, thinking about how angry Trump must have been. I mean, we've heard stories already about him fuming and then he spooked and, you know, all of these stories, but that was the real gold, I feel like. I mean, the Cohen stuff today was pretty good, just in rolling the ball forward and giving us some information about what's actually going on. But man, that was awesome.
And then there was that Twitter stuff yesterday where you go, what exactly, what exactly is all of that?
What the hell are you talking about, old man? That's what I feel like I say almost every day now to Donald Trump. Every time he tweets something out, I'm just like, what are you on about? And it's so deranged. It's so, and it, sometimes it's really transparent that he's trying to change subject or he's just trying to divert attention for the latest story that has just come out about whatever. But either way, he's just trying to get people to talk about something else and then tweet about a whole bunch of books that we know he hasn't read.
Well, you know, he had someone come in and give him the picture version.
Right.
You got the pop-up version of the book.
This is you. This is you winning balloons. There you go.
There you go. Right there. There it is. But here's the thing. I'm waiting for January when Adam Schiff gets control of Nunes's chair and we start actually looking into what the Republicans are hiding. And there are reports that evidently, and I think Swalwell was the guy, Eric Swalwell, the representative, said, you know, we don't know what they've got hidden in the basement. And you go, how many lies and how much obfuscation and how much BS is the Republican Party sitting on?
Yeah, and you mentioned Nunes, Schiff taking over for Nunes. I want to know what Nunes knew, because he shut that thing down fast. And now we're finding out all of this unbelievable amount of information. How did Nunes not know about what was going on? Did he just not care? I want to know what his involvement was, what he knew, when he knew it. I want a hearing with him, and I want to know what happens.
No, I'm with you.
And I don't think that would be something that the America, I don't think that would pull badly to America. I don't think that would be something that Democrats could be like, oh, we need to be careful, you know, here. I feel like the United States probably is not the biggest fan of Devin Nunes. Somehow he managed to get reelected, but
yeah, I really wanted Andy Jans to win. I was really pulling for him out there.
Maybe if he's actually funded, you know, if people like jump in and help him out, I'd like to see him run again. I think that would be a fantastic race if he had the support behind him that he should have had.
No, he was a good guy. We had him on the show a number of times. And, you know, one of those people that you want in those positions.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just is what it was. But, you know, I look at, you know, my friend Adam, you know, calls Nunes the Kremlin gremlin. And for a reason. And I'm hoping that when Schiff takes control, it's not just all focused on Trump, that we go and we find out, you know, hey, Russia's Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, what did he do? What did he know? You know, and really delve into where this money has, because it's follow the money. And it's not just Russia, it's Saudi Arabia as well.
Yep, exactly. Like we're seeing this play out with Saudi Arabia now. You mentioned Rohrabacher and Nunes. I want to know what the hell Mike Pence knows. Because there's no way
not a lot
about any of this.
Not a lot. There's not a lot going on in there.
There's just a picture of Jesus on the cross and beating a gay person to death. That's pretty much all that lives in his brain.
Yep, that's pretty much it. And that's our future if he's president.
But that's the thing. I think we need to find out what the hell Pence knew and when he knew it, because there's no way that he's out of the loop on some of this stuff. You remember whenever Michael Flynn lied to him, and that was a huge deal to Pence. Pence stormed in Trump's office and said, right, you know, this is what he told me, and he lied to me. And then they tried to pretend like that was the reason they really fired Flynn, was that he lied to Mike Pence. Well,
his wife lies to him all the time. I don't think that's a big deal.
Oh, no comment, mother.
There you go again. And finally, to wrap things up, Nancy Pelosi going to be speaker, and the Wonder Girl, who I love, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, supporting her.
Yeah, what was interesting to me is that folks thought that she wouldn't, and it's not that she was a huge opponent of Pelosi. Whenever she was in the protest outside her office, she was meeting with Pelosi. Whenever that protest was out there, and Pelosi suggested to her, you should go out there and talk with the protesters and stand with them. And say, I mean, this was not some weird nefarious opposition to Pelosi. And I don't know how it got twisted into that. I know that there are a lot of people who are huge, you know, Pelosi opponents, but they're mostly people from areas of the country that, you know, have been getting ads blasted all over TV saying that Pelosi is the source of every person's ills. Which is just insane. A lot of these new members don't know her.
Right.
There are some annoying things about her. I actually think she's a lot more conservative in votes than she should be, given the district she works for. But the woman is the smartest person when it comes to the actual numbers of these races. She's one of the biggest fundraisers for Democrats in the country. So this idea that, I mean, this is why Republicans want to get rid of her. She's smart. She raises money.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the thing that blows me away.
No, and I said from the beginning when the story broke, I said one of two things are going on. One, convene the circular firing squad because this is a dumb thing to do. Or two, Nancy Pelosi told her to do it. And now, because I hadn't heard that Pelosi told her to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I said, you know this is one of the two things. And now I found out that, well, good on her.
Yeah, I mean, Pelosi's not an idiot. She's going to let Ocasio-Cortez do what she's got to do. And be who she wants to be. I don't feel like Pelosi is so concerned about that seat that she is going to dictate one way or the other. She's going to try and raise money for people that we need to hang on to in 2020 and hopefully get some more Democrats that ran this year that narrowly missed it. Hopefully they'll run again in 2020.
Yeah, I'm hoping that right here in my district, somebody runs against Scott Perry and throws him to the curb. But you know, I look at this, you know, this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, and the attacks that, you know, the right has thrown on her. And the one that I talked about on our TV show this week was, you know, they went after her for not having enough savings. She didn't have enough money in her 401k. And you go, wait a second, do you people not know who the millennials are? Do you not know what a bartender makes for a living? I mean, it was another one of these ridiculous attacks. And I'm not sure, you know, quite why they attack her over it, other than, you know, she shouldn't be in Congress because she's broke. And I got to tell you, I like the fact that she's broke because maybe she'll understand what it's like to be me for a day.
Exactly. Like, that's one of the things that we talk about is that a lot of these members who are elected, you have to have a boatload of money to run a campaign just because it's hard to raise that much money. For her, You know, it was all legwork for a lot of candidates, actually, this cycle. It was legwork. It was knocking the doors and doing the field program and talking to voters. And I think that that is one of those weird kind of things where I feel like that is representative of America. Why would we want a Congress filled with millionaires? I mean, clearly that hasn't worked out too well with Donald Trump. So,
well, I think part of it is, you know, somehow we've been told that the rich people are smart because they're rich. They must be smart if they're rich.
Well, obviously, look at Betsy DeVos. I mean, think about all of the rich people that are working for Donald Trump. All of these people, Wilbur Ross, and these are sketchy people. So, I mean, I'm not saying that a poor person couldn't be corrupt. It just seems like, I mean, I wouldn't have time to be corrupt. I'm too busy working.
No, and look, you know, everybody I talked to, you know, when I was 29, if it weren't for my union, I'd have no money in pension savings.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't even pay off my student loans until like 2 or 3 years ago. So, I mean, and I was in my 30s. Like, I was 30. So,
no, you know, and I look at her again. I guess she's got a huge student loan debts as well. And all of those things, I hope she remembers. And I hope, you know, I want somebody who struggles and who's in those positions, being in those rooms, reminding these millionaires that, you know, us, you know, the rabble, the unwashed masses, we struggle. We struggle with this stuff. And maybe instead of giving massive welfare to corporations like General Motors and massive welfare to Betsy DeVos and the billionaire class, maybe, well, I don't know, maybe let some of that trickle down.
Yeah, like actually just give it to us and we'll buy things in the local economies and build it up again. I mean, I think about Barack Obama, who has a boatload of money now, but when he wrote his book and it sold a bazillion copies after he did the speech in 2004, he and Michelle were both still in debt up to their eyeballs, like hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt for their college education and law school for both of them, not to mention their mortgage on their house. So the first thing that they did with the millions that he was able to make off of the book is they paid off all of their debt. I mean, these are not people who decided, you know, oh, we're going to buy this McMansion. They paid off their debt just like the rest of America would do.
Well, they were living in the White House. You could afford to do that.
No, this is before he was in the White House.
I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's one of those things. As president, couldn't he just, you know, pardon himself from all that debt?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like with the student loan thing, I mean, you cannot get out of those student loans. You can't file for bankruptcy. I mean, people talk about how we would have found bin Laden like years earlier if he had a student loan.
I always say it's like herpes. You never get rid of them.
Right. For real.
Yeah. Sad stuff. Anyway, Sarah, I appreciate the time. Always fun talking with you. Always make me laugh.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
I love Sarah Burris. And make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story. She does some fantastic reporting. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk. Somewhere else now with their cloths and fabric press.